Thank you. My name's Carol Thornton, and I'm a very grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon. I wish you guys were a little more enthusiastic. Just a tad. I always think I'm in Nebraska when I hear this, because that's one of my favorite places to talk. Thank you. My name's Carol Thornton, and I'm a very grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon. I wish you guys were a little more enthusiastic. Just a tad. I always think I'm in Nebraska when I hear this, because that's one of my favorite places to talk, because they're very enthusiastic. But everywhere I go, they're enthusiastic. I want to see the hands of the AA members in the audience. I want you, Al-Anon, to take a look at the men and women of Al-Anon who have open minds. Some don't care for us. Don't ask me why. I think they're afraid. You know, when you get booed and hissed, it's just because they're jealous they don't have one at home. And I'm glad you have this cross here, because I have a young lady I sponsor named Rebecca, and she always, when she has the newcomers meeting and gets a whiner, she always says, "Get off the cross, we need the wood." And there it stands, you know. I just love it. I don't use notes, but these are my notes to remember to thank Cindy for asking me. I'm very grateful to be asked to share at any time, because you have given me back the only thing that was ever mine to give away, and that's myself. And for that, I will be extremely grateful. My gift bag in my room was darling, and I thank you for that. My room is very lovely. You know, they had me living in a teepee and going to the outhouse and all the stuff all the way up here, because I told Cindy that I really don't do campouts. My idea of camping out is wearing turquoise. And that's as close as I want to get, you know. Janet is a lovely hostess, and her husband Carl, we just had lots of fun coming up here and lots of laughter, because, of course, we had Karen with us, who is still napping. But we tried. We tried. We made a lot of noise. We went in several times, and bless her heart, she's really going to have to live this one down. You've had a fine speaker. You heard Donna, and you're going to hear her husband. I won't try to run into your time, Terry, this afternoon. You have a great, great bunch of speakers. They are all wonderful up till now. And I'm a sharer, not a speaker. But I need to tell you how grateful I am. This is beautiful. You know, this. I just got back from Alaska, when the gentleman that stood up for Alaska. And it is, there are no atheists in Alaska. It is the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And this comes pretty close. This is really gorgeous. We don't have this much open space in California. And we don't have this much air. And I'm not used to driving to a conference without a gun or a knife, you know. And lunch and water, because you never know when you're going to get there. They have every day you can turn on your television and see what do you call them, runaway car, they chase, speed chase, you know. That's just common anymore. And it's a crazy place to live, but I absolutely love it. I've always loved living in California, and for that I'm grateful. I need to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I look nothing like the lovely lady you see up here today when I got to Al-Anon. I have before and after pictures. I don't know whether I have them with me, but to proof of what I'm talking about. And this is not ego. It's just reality. And I never want to forget that. But I'm an Army brat. I'm one of seven children. I was born and raised in the Army. My dad was a career Army man. And the things that I'm going to share with you this morning are a direct result of a written four-step done with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. and written in the four-column method. Now, I know some of you might not think that's conference approved, but I'm here to tell you nobody in this room is conference approved. And unless you got that tattoo on you. Some people don't approve of that, but you see, when I came in, there was no blueprint for progress. And I hate to remind the Al-Nons, but you know, everything we have today, we got from them, including the illness. So they wouldn't live with us if we behaved like them for 2 seconds. So no wonder we're sicker than they are. You know, I have no quarrel with that. You know, they wouldn't live with it. That's the absolute truth. I haven't met an alcoholic yet who doesn't agree with that. So I have no quarrel being the sicker. But I grew up with, my folks were a lot of fun. My folks, I'm sorry to say, are not alcoholic. I don't call any of my relatives alcoholic because they didn't go to meetings. And it's my conception. My sponsor told me that I didn't have the right to call anyone an alcoholic unless they raised their hand in an AA meeting as an alcoholic. Before that, they're just drunk. Now, my parents drank. Well, we had parties every Saturday night, and it was always looked like fun to me. I grew up having no fear about drinking. My mother laughed and sang and played the piano till the day she died. She was a dynamite lady, and she had to be crazy, first of all, to have 7 kids. Her mother had 13. She was even weirder. But back then, we didn't know where babies come from. I heard a friend of mine say, Ken Devaney, who said, you know, safe sex to us in our era was make sure the doors are locked on the car. And, but I had 5 brothers. I was the only girl in that family for a long time, and the rule in the house was they had to take me everywhere they went. And I loved it. They hated it. But no one ever talked back in my family. That's back when children were seen and not heard. I try to remind my grandchildren of that, but it doesn't work. But they had to take me everywhere, and I could beat them at any sport, and I love that, you know, and I can do anything they can do. Even today, when we're together, you know, I say the only difference between me and you is that you've never been pregnant and I've never been circumcised, and that's it, you know. And so it was a happy house. Now, when I say it was a happy house, it was a house full of rules because my dad ran us just like the Army. There were Saturday morning inspections, and we were restricted when we did something naughty. We were whipped with a belt. I don't go to Battered Children's Anonymous. Thank you. I qualify for a lot of programs. I go to nothing but open AA meetings, Alateen when I'm invited, and Al-Anon. And that has given me everything that any woman in the whole world could want in her life and more than I ever deserved or expected. And I'm happy with that. But it was fun getting a whipping in our house because my dad was gone a lot. And my mother had she couldn't catch us. And she would start laughing. She had a marvelous sense of humor. And she gave each one of us that sense of humor as a gift. And I misused mine for a long time in my marriage till I got to Al-Anon. But anyway, she couldn't catch us. But she had a fine mind, which is probably what I told her. I said, the reason you're losing your mind, Mom, is because you tattled on us so much when we were kids. But she would just give her morning report to Dad. He would come home, she'd say, she did this, he did this, he did this. And he'd march us in one by one and whip us with this belt, you know. We paid my youngest brother a nickel to hide that belt. He was always pretty dumb. Dad would always say, tell the truth and you won't get a whipping. And he'd tell him and get the whipping for ratting. I thought it was great. And but it was a lot of fun. But there were certain things. The labels I share with you this morning are a direct result of that 4-step. I didn't like being a girl because girls were raised different in our house. I had to be in the house at 9 o'clock till I was 16 years old. My brothers didn't have to peel potatoes. They didn't have to set the table or do dishes or make their bed or do any of those things. And I really felt put upon. Now, I never mentioned that. I am not that dumb. I never thought about it then until I got into my inventory. But and we moved a lot. I hated moving. I grew up with the thought that all I wanted to do was grow up, get married, and live in one town the rest of my life. My children would go to school, and their children would go to school, and we would never, ever move. And, you know, eventually in this program, you get all your dreams here. You know, today I have lived almost 21 years in the house that I'm in now, and that's the longest I've lived in any house in my entire life. and that's because of this program. But we moved, and I hated being the new girl in school, and my brother and I, who are about 10 months apart, I think, something like that, and we lied and told him we were twins, so that helped a lot because I had my brother in the same class, and it was a fun life. And so those were the things. That's all I wanted to do, was grow up, get married, and have 8 children, because I love big families. And I am so grateful that God does not listen to the prayers of fools. I don't know what I would have done with 8, although I have 8 today, and I hope to remember to tell you that. I had 4, and they're all mine. And you'll understand that. But when we moved from Oklahoma into New York, my father decided it was time to get me out of overalls and into a dress to become a lady, and so he put me in a convent. And my folks aren't Catholic, that's one, and aren't to this day, but in the olden days, as my kids like to say, that's what they did. I went to school with girls from all over the world, different faiths, different colors, and my nuns were not kind and loving. They were trained by Hitler. And the meanest nun in that school, it was a personal friend of mine till the day she died. She died 2 years ago. And she taught me a whole lot. They were consistently mean. It's nice to be consistent. She taught me not to play, to chew gum. She told me not to chew gum, and so I chewed it. And she invited me to eat soap, and it was not Dove or Ivory. It was GI soap is what I called it, but it was like Fell's Nap then. All of you in this room are much too young to remember that soap. But it's yellow. It was about this big. And I'll tell you something that I learned. I did not chew gum till I was 45 years old. And even today, I only chew half a stick in case I meet one of those broads. And some things never go away. And nuns today still look like nuns, even though they don't wear the habit. You know, I tease Sister B all the time because I got to watch her get sober and wittier. And I said, you know, you look like a nun in a bathing suit. I mean, there's just something about them. And it's true, they do. But because of that fine Catholic education, I became a convert to Catholicism, and I majored in shame and minored in pain, I think. I don't know. Everything I heard, and that's as I heard, and I'm no different than the alcoholic. I have selective hearing on any day. Depends on my spiritual connection with God, I can tell you that, because I hear funny, and unless I'm in a good place, I hear funny today. But all I heard was there's big sins and little sins, and I didn't want to be caught doing that. But that fine that I learned also in the program that, you know, religion is for those who believe in hell, but spirituality is for those of us that have been there, and that suits me just fine. I'm a Catholic in good standing. I'm not a recovering Catholic. I have no quarrel with the church. Church didn't have anything to do with what I did with my life, and I'm happy to report that. I went to high school in Europe, and we eventually came back, and we settled in California, in Northern California, and I met the God of my understanding. Now, I had dated some in high school. I was very popular in high school, and it wasn't because I had an interesting and helpful manner. I had a good sense of humor, and I had a lot of male friends, a lot of girlfriends. And the reason I had all those people in my life was because I had 5 good-looking brothers. I am not dumb. And they loved coming to our house because it was always a lot of fun. My brothers, to this day, when they were in the service, never came home alone. They always brought 2 or 3 other people with them. And as I said, now when I tell you how my family was, it says when the 7 of us were together, it's like we had 7 different sets of parents. Everybody remembers their folks differently. And I learned that in open AA meetings and in Al-Anon. And because it's really funny, they'll think, I say, God, that doesn't sound like my mother, you know, must have been yours. So, and my mother used to just make my mother's hair stand up when we do that. Excuse me, but It was a neat time of my life, but I always thought that my father had ruined my life, because the night of my senior ball, the gentleman that I was going to the dance with was older than I was, and the deal was he had to have me home by midnight, or the MPs would escort me home because we were living on base, and that's exactly what they did. We were 5 minutes late, and they took me out of the car into the Jeep and delivered me to my father, and I was restricted for 30 days. And when my dad said no, he meant no. You know, he was a very small man in stature, but let me tell you, he meant what he said what he meant, and he covered the ground he stood on till the day he died. And I'm forever grateful for that upbringing today, because it has given me a fine mind, and most of the time, since I'm more mature than most of you, not older, more mature, I like that. But anyway, I met the God of my understanding, and he was wonderful, as all alcoholics are, and I have the right to call him an alcoholic, because he died as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous this past year, and for that I'm eternally grateful for him. And because it wasn't always that way. But he was everything any girl could want. He was tall and good-looking, had blonde curly hair, blue eyes, big dimples, big shoulders, was a big football star. Sounds like a horse, but he was just built that way. He was just big. And I entered into the relationship the same way I entered into the marriage 2 years later. Lucky. Wasn't I lucky that I had this wonderful man, who was so wonderful, good-looking, polite, well-mannered, wonderful, wonderful man, good sense of humor, that wanted someone as ugly as I was, because all my life I felt ugly. I don't know where my self-worth was, but I never felt adequate, never felt dressed appropriately. If I went to a party and they were in slacks, I was in a dress. If I went in slacks, they were in dresses. Just never fit in. My feelings are no different than the woman alcoholic. You see, after the first step, I believe that we are exactly alike. I have no quarrel with that. I feel as welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous as I do in Al-Anon and Alateen today, and I'm grateful for that, because it's not always that way in some areas today, and it's kind of sad. But anyway, we were engaged for 2 years, and all the rules in our house stopped. I thought they liked him better than me. That's exactly how I felt. It was a wonderful courtship. I knew then that there was a little problem, but I couldn't see it. It was always my fault. He always said it was my fault, and I always believed him. And we married 2 years later, and he proposed with that magic two words. You're what? So we ran off to Reno and we were married. And you know, it started. And my marriage is no different than anyone else's. It's just more in one degree and not in another. No alcoholics are alike, I'm here to tell you that. And for that, I'm eternally grateful for. But anyway, I knew nothing about alcoholism. Absolutely nothing. I thought that I was going crazy. And crazy and crazier, you know. It's just, I couldn't figure out what was happening in my life, because it started out so great. In the beginning, we were not both sick, you know. Alcoholism is a sneaky, sneaky, rotten disease, and it never gets better. It always gets worse unless you seek help, and I know that today, but I didn't know anything about it then. And I had told him all my big secrets, you know, because he was so easy to talk to. And I didn't learn until I came to Al-Anon not to tell him everything, because it never sounded right when it came back a month later, you know, when he was drinking. And it just didn't work very well. I wanted four children. I wanted eight children. He didn't want any, and I had four. I had two little girls 15 months apart, and 4 years went by, and I had two little boys 15 months apart. I was told after my first one that I would never have children again, and I never thought I had a control issue, but anyway, I had three more. Two of my children were crippled children, poster kids in California, and I got very sick behind that. Because first of all, I had married out of my faith. And I was pregnant when I got married, and I thought God was punishing me. Today I know that's not true. But then I didn't. I thought that I had committed this big sin. And worse than that, the priest told me, was that I had married a Southern Baptist. That's worse than getting pregnant for a Catholic in the old days. But I had these four children, and I just kept getting sicker. Now, in the beginning, I did not drink. And my husband taught me to drink. And since I was pregnant, I never went out to drink with him. And then my brother, my oldest brother, sat me down. He said, you know, Carol, there's a lot of women out there that will drink with him if you won't. Because he always asked me to go with him on Friday night. And so I started going out with my husband. And he taught me to drink. And I drank at him, against him, tried to get drunk first so he'd see what he looked like. And it did not work for me. Now, I know today, as I stand here, that I am not an alcoholic. And I know that because years ago, one of my first places was in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and Peggy M. was there, and I was at the meeting, and I heard her say, you know, the more I drank, the bigger my tits grew. I thought, wow! Now, you can tell today that I am not voluptuous. Inside I am, but that's okay. But I know today from hearing her that drinking did not do for me what it did for them. You know, if you're short, it makes you tall. If you're tall, it makes you short. If you're blonde, you be a brunette. You know, you're the life of the party if you're a wallflower. You know, it does a magic for the alcoholic that it does not do. And if you're in a drinking marriage, it becomes more important for you to watch what they're drinking than it is for you to drink. Eventually, that's the way it becomes. There was physical abuse in our home. My husband, I'm a battered wife. I do not go to Battered Wives Anonymous. I know through my inventory that my mouth got me in a lot of trouble. I have a killer mouth. I know that sarcasm is to rip the flesh, and I got very good at that in my marriage. You see, I didn't know. I went to bed every single night in my home thinking that when I woke up it was not going to be the same thing, that what was happening in my life was not happening, that I was just living a nightmare, and that's not true. My children suffered more from living with their mother than they did from their dad because he wasn't home that much. He was a periodic in the beginning, and I didn't understand that. It was always my fault. He would come home, we would have these, what they call today, meaningful conversations. I don't even use the word meaningful anymore. And I would always apologize for whatever he said I did to cause him to do that. Now, if that makes sense to you, you are in the right place. And it was a crazy way to live. My children were abused by their dad. And I know today that a lot of that was done in blackout drinking. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I'm grateful. I thought blackout meant passed out. It does not mean that. And I did a lot of things wrong in that marriage. I tried everything. I tried marriage counseling. He drove me to the priest, and he waited in the parking lot while I went in for my counseling, since it was my fault. And the priest said, you know, Carol, it takes two. How many times have you asked him coming home, how many drinks you had? Two, you know. I have a friend that said, if they say six, they're not alcoholics. They're just not. It's always two, you know. I tried being a better cook and a better baker. I baked all the bread and desserts in our house twice a week for 22 and a half years till everybody in my family had a weight problem of me. And I have a full-time career the whole time we were married. Now, I never knew that I probably could have stayed home and things would have been all right. I don't know that they would have been. But I've worked all my life since I was 14 years old, so I had a full-time career. I belonged to every organization there was, business and professional women, the church, the altar guild, the parents club, all this stuff. My children were all sent to parochial school. And my husband eventually married me in the Catholic church. I had our marriage blessed in the Catholic Church because he knew with my conscience I would never divorce him. And he was right for many, many years. And I thought tough love meant standing up to him. It does not mean that. And I just got tired of trying to cover up. And my husband would say in the morning, "What happened to you?" And I'd say, "What do you mean what happened to me? You know what happened to me." And he said, "You are just really sick, you know." And I thought, well, maybe I dreamed it. Maybe, you know, it looked like I got hit by a truck. I just couldn't figure out what was going on because it was always my fault. And I accepted that. And I got sicker and sicker and sicker. I tried to take my life twice in my marriage. I'm not happy to say that. However, it is no big deal. It's an ordinary thing that happens in marriages in drunkenness. And that's as easy as I can say it. I didn't even know there were suicide attempts till I came into Al-Anon and had my first Thanksgiving meeting was on suicide. And we try to kill ourselves in various ways. We eat, we don't eat, we smoke, we don't smoke, we drink, we try all this stuff. It doesn't work, but, you know, if you don't believe that there's a God in your life, my God, you know, we're all here. We're all here. And, because we're not all there is why. And, no ordinary person, you know, people call them earth people. I call them ordinary people, or PWPs, which is people without a program. And they don't have anywhere to go. They don't have anywhere to go. You know, in our meetings, we can come in and say, you know, "I tried to kill him." They go, or, you know, "I want to kill myself." You run on to, "I want to get a divorce." You know, you can on Sunday, so forget it. But anyway, nothing is serious. I mean, we come in here and all my life I lied about the things. Today I can laugh about the things I lied about all my life. I lied in confession. How would he know? My husband would say, "He's not married. How would he know what's going on?" You know, but I was crazy. I absolutely was crazy. Now, my husband was also a womanizer. He had a lot of lower companions. I learned to call them that in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I never looked for my husband but twice. Once I saw his car and I stole his car so he wouldn't kill himself on the way home. And because I had stopped going with him. I went out every Friday night with my husband for 22 years to keep the romance in our marriage. It doesn't work because if you drink too much, you get drunk, they take you home and dump you and go back about their business. And that's how we were living, to keep the romance there. And it didn't work. You know, we played all those games, in the big bed, out of the big bed, on the couch, back in the big bed, another baby. And but it was getting steadily worse. Now, the second time, when I took that car home, the next day being Sunday, I was at church, because by then I was a bead-clicking, candle-burning Catholic, I can tell you. St. Jude was my favorite saint. He still is today. But anyway, I came out of church, and my car was gone. And it wasn't worth stealing, so I couldn't imagine anyone taking it. And we had moved so many times. You know, I moved more with my husband in the 26 and a half years we were married than I moved with my father in 18 years in the Army. And he wasn't in the Army. So, but I knew nothing about geographics. I didn't know anything about those things. He just said, you know, there was a better job down the road. And if there's one thing I know about alcoholics, is that they are the best at whatever they do. If they're a ditch digger, they're the best ditch digger in the world when they're there. And I've met a lot of them, and when you think of who they are, you wonder how sometimes we fly on those planes and, you know, go to these places with pilots who really have no business being a pilot. But anyway, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, they're all here. But anyway, the second time I knew how to find him. See, I know how to hurt myself. I don't need anybody's help. All I have to do is think about where he is. And I knew how to call the motels and say, "Are Mr. and Mrs. so-and-so there?" And they'd say, "No, but they have reservations. They have reservations." So that would just make me feel better, you know, lower than whale poop, as some people put it. I mean, it was just, I felt less a woman. I never liked being a woman when I got here. My sponsor had a lot of work to do in that area when I got here. But anyway, I knew how to find him, and I was one day out of St. Jude's Hospital with 100 stitches in one leg, and they had to let me go because I wouldn't heal. And I know today why I wouldn't heal. It was impossible to heal in that condition. And I started calling, and I called a motel where we had lived as a family when we first moved to Southern California. And he made his first mistake of the day, because I told him, it doesn't matter if you run around, as long as you don't do it in the town that the kids and I live in and go to school and work in. And that's the biggest lie I ever told, because it does do a number. I don't care who you are, man or woman, it does a number on you. And he made his first mistake. He answered the phone at this motel, and I gave him an hour to be home because I was into money, property, and prestige, and I wanted the money to pay the rent because I knew his firm was paying a large bonus that week. And I gave him an hour to be home. Now, I had lost all credibility with him with what I said I would do. I never threatened divorce, but I never did that. And so I gave him 55 minutes, and I conned my 17-year-old son at the time and a neighbors who were visiting to take me to that motel with the promise that I wouldn't go in. Biggest lie I ever told. I got there, and I knocked on the room door, and he answered, and that was his second mistake of the day. And I got in the room, and I don't know how I got in the room, and it's not important to me today, but his lower companion ran into the bathroom and locked the door, and I don't know why she was afraid of me. I made a hole. I made a hole about this big in the bathroom door with her overnight case. Of course, they weren't doing anything wrong, and they were not properly attired for 2:30 in the afternoon, and I threw her wig out in the middle of Whittier Boulevard, and he didn't know she was wearing a wig. Now who's sick? And I stole her purse, and I turned it into the police in that town because I knew that her husband was a cop in another town. And then I went back and had a drink with him because I wanted the money. And you know, that's not to degrade the alcoholic, believe me. It's my sickness. Because I wanted that money, you know. When I was new in Allen, I used to say we were moving. But this is podium pentothal up here, and you tell the truth. We were being evicted from our house, and I wanted that money. And but I, as I said, I went back, and I got the money, and I left. And I'd like to tell you I ran to Al-Anon. I had been to two AA meetings in my lifetime, that short period of time. My sober sister-in-law from Dallas was visiting and my husband was picked up for drunk driving. And I wouldn't get him out of jail. Now, it wasn't that I didn't have the money, and it wasn't that that I knew better. He had embarrassed me in front of his mother and sister, and I was not going to be a party to it. I was a snob. It's exactly what I was. But his sister got him out. I don't know what she told her sponsor, but anyway, I remember she said, would you be embarrassed to take me to an AA meeting? And I said, no, if you find out, where it was, I'll take you. And I took her to my first AA meeting in Whittier, California, and Serenity Sam was the speaker, and he made me laugh like I hadn't laughed in years and years. And I am so grateful for having that. And once my husband said he was going to A&A to save our marriage, and I told my boss, I was working for a large Lutheran church at the time. I'm the only Catholic ever certified by the Lutheran church to be a parish secretary. They've since changed the application. But I told him about him going to Alcoholics Anonymous because he knew a little bit about my life. And I trusted him with it. And he said, Carol, don't ask to go to a meeting with him. Wait until he invites you. And so I did. He eventually asked me to go to a speaker meeting. And so I did, and a lovely lady at the door as I was leaving patted me on the hand and said, you know, you ought to come to Al-Anon. And I said, I can't, I work. And that was the end of it. But by this time, it was just a crazy house. Our daughters were married by that time and out of the house, and I had two teenage sons. And we moved from that home, and I moved into an apartment. I had gotten enough courage to keep the money separate, and I rented an apartment, and he was gone. Now, he never said, Carol, I'm going to be gone about 14 days, but I don't want you to eat, sleep, or have any fun, but go to work every day and lie, cheat, and steal from me. But I did that on my own accord. I am not a victim of an alcoholic marriage. I'm a volunteer. Never. I don't have victimitis. I don't want victimitis. I take full responsibility for my part in that, and that's through the steps of this program. But anyway, the day I moved, he came home, wouldn't you know. And then one more time we had that conversation. It was going to be better now that those damn kids were gone, you know. And that didn't sound as good to me as it did in the beginning. And we were out. He'd always wanted a pool. I had moved to an apartment, a small apartment, two-bedroom apartment with a pool in our front yard. And we were sitting on the patio, and he said, "Let me mix you a drink." And I said, "No, I'll never drink with you again as long as I live." And I don't remember what happened that night. I have not found it necessary to go to a therapist to find out. Frankly, I really don't care, because I can't go back and relive it. I can't even go back to yesterday and make that plane be on time. So I don't try. But I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was covered in blood and black and blue from head to foot and had very few teeth, no glasses, and I had lost the hearing in my one ear from lack of knowledge and my mouth. I never, ever knew what I was dealing with. And I ran away from home. I grabbed my purse, my non-alcoholic purse covered with crap in it, no money, but lots of bills and stuff, important stuff. And I ran away from home, and I ran to my boss's house, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what I remembered. I called, and the magic of the program began for me, because that man kept me on the phone and said, "Carol, give me your number." He said, "I have a lady who needs to talk to you, and if you just stay there for 10 minutes, I'll have someone call you." And the magic began, because it seems to me today, I'll be 27 on August 15th, if I make it. And I hung up that phone, and it rang immediately to me. And I picked up that phone, and a lovely, soft southern voice from Texas talked to me. And she kept me on the phone for a long time. And that began for me a necklace of diamonds that only God and I can see. By that I mean, she got the address where I was, and she came over and she spent the entire day with me. And then she took me that night to my first meeting on August 15th in La Habra, California, of 1974. And nobody at that meeting said, "Oh, you poor thing." I was apologizing for having on my sunglasses. And this lady said, "Why don't you just start by being grateful you can see?" I thought she was tacky. But you see, they didn't feel sorry for me. And I'm grateful for that. They gave me tough love. During the break, a little teeny tiny lady came up and shared how she stopped the physical violence in her home, and I listened to it. And I got a sponsor that night, because I heard about sponsorship. My sponsor is somebody that I want to be just like when I grow up. And that is still my only criteria for a sponsor. I don't care how she behaves in a meeting, because she taught me nobody behaves in a meeting like they do at home. I know that's not true of you guys, but nobody does. So she said, you look at the marriages in the program that you want. You look at the people and how they behave with one another when they're outside the program. And that's my criteria today. But anyway, I got a sponsor that night, and it was the lady that made the 12-step call on me. We don't get many 12-step calls anymore in Al-Anon, because they all come through hospital programs or therapists or someone else. But they pay to get sent there. That's how sick they are. They don't know it's free. But anyway, just a little pain. And you know, I didn't come here because I was out shopping at Dillard's and wanted to come in and see what you had on sale. I came because of the four-letter word pain, and I stay today for the four-letter word love, because it's given me everything. She told me how she stopped the physical violence, and I went home and waited. And when old-timers tell you something, just wait your time, because it'll come to you in God's time. And listen to them, because they have a lot of wise things. And she said, "I just waited till he was sobering up, and then I looked him in the eye and said, 'Remember, you have to sleep sometime.'" And and I waited my turn, and of course I have a smart mouth, so when my turn came, you know, he felt really bad, and he was on the couch, and I said, "Remember, you'll never touch me again, because remember, you have to sleep sometime." And I'll tell you, as I stand here today, it still does my heart good. He became a nervous sleeper. He would start to nod off, and he'd look to see where I was. Plus, I did have an aluminum blue ball bat in my hand when I said it. And that helped. But I tell you, I learned everything. I went home and I practiced. My sponsor gave me 3 assignments. She didn't ever, has never, my sponsor today, named Charlotte, has never told me what to do. She has shared her love of the program and her marriage with me. And that's the way I learned. She gave me assignments. And she said, first thing I want you to do is go home and keep up doing all those things, those 4-letter words that we like to release. And that's like wash, iron, cook, bake, love, kiss, all those things. I said, you've got to be kidding. She said, no. Carol, I want you to practice at home your service. You continue doing those things. And I would go home, and I would sing and whistle. And believe me, I whistle better than I sing. And he would say to me, you're not happy. And I'd say, yes, I am. Because I had learned by pretending it becomes so. And you pretend to do the things you want to do until they no longer have to be pretended. And that's simple. And my second assignment was to go home and tell my children that I loved them out loud. I didn't think my parents loved me. I hadn't heard it very much that I even remember, you see. And I know today through my inventory, I wanted all the love my father had for all of us, for me. Because I always felt less then. I had a little sister by that time, and I didn't like her when she was born, and I don't like her much today, but I love her in a very special way. She needs this program desperately, but she doesn't choose to come. And I know that I'm too close to her. It's going to be you guys that help her. But anyway, I just loved it. I went home, and I would say to my boys, remember, no matter what, I love you. And they'd say, oh, God, you know, what's going on with Mom? You know? Because I always heard the same thing at home, you know, keep your hands in your pocket and your fly zipped and you won't get in trouble. That's what my mother always told my brothers. And she was telling the wrong person, probably. But anyway, it worked because they don't know. It took me 6 years calling my father every Sunday during Wide, Wide World of Sports. And I would say, I love you, Dad. And he'd say, you're a good kid, clunk. 6 years. And I said, I love you, Dad. And he said, I love you, too. And from that day forward, I heard it all the time. And that begins at home. Because kids don't know. Kids don't know. Parents don't know. So it's real important. Those are the 3 magic words. My third assignment was to practice finding a God in my understanding by looking in the mirror 3 times a day and telling the lady in the mirror that I liked her and that I loved her. I did not know that God's a lover. God has always loved me. No matter whether I'm good, no matter where I go to church, no matter what I do in my life, my God loves me. And I know that. And I did that. It sounds silly, feels dumb. But I wear this little pin every time I share. It was made for me by a double winner, not a double whiner. And when I'm out of sorts with you, all I have to do is look in this mirror and see where the problem is. I have some little things that Dick is looking into getting me more of that says you are looking at the problem, that I have a few with me, and I'd be glad to share them with you. And that's what I have to remember. It is never you. It is always me. I have discovered who the enemy is. You know, my mind is furnished just like a house. If you got warm, loving thoughts in that mind, that's the way you're going to become. But if you put cold, boring, and rotten in there, that's the way you're going to hear. And I know that today. I read recently where this man and his wife at an airport, and this man said, where's your home? And the man turned to his wife and he said, wherever she is. You see, that's the kind of thing I wanted. When I got through with my inventory and my steps, I got a divorce. It was necessary for me to get that divorce because I had resigned as entertainment chairman in my home. It was no longer necessary for me to make him behave the way I thought he should for me, for the world, for his family, for whatever reason. And it was a difficult divorce. He didn't want it. We had to find him. And he moved a tie at a time out of that house. It was really hard. But I followed through. It was not a threat. It was something that I had to do for my safety and for the safety of my children, the 2 boys. Because by then my boys had started drinking. It was like having triplets in the house. But you see, I went to my first meeting on a Thursday, and Friday night I went to an AA speaker meeting, and that was my meeting to the day I married, moved across town, and I still continue to go. And I urge Al-Anons to go to the open AA meetings, because you'll hear your own story. But anyway, I remain single in Al-Anon. People would say, how come you're still coming? You no longer live with the problem. Well, I am the problem right here. I don't think positive. I absolutely don't think positive. I think negative. It's foreign. It says foreign for me to give up criticizing, gossiping, all those things. It is for the alcoholic to stop drinking. But I strive. I don't want to be perfect. I live with perfection all my life. No thanks. There's only one perfect person, and he's upstairs. But anyway, I stayed single in Al-Anon, and I had a lot of fun. I was very busy. I became secretary of my group my first 30 days in Al-Anon. There were no rules back then, and sometimes I think there's none today. But anyway, there's only 12 steps, and I loved it. I had all the speakers I ever wanted to hear. You see, I was really fortunate. I came in, and Betty Alpe and Dottie Walker and Winnie Eddy and all the great women that are now upstairs. And they were members of my home group, and I was very blessed because I still have all the friends that I came in with in my life today, and that's because of you. And I started a 12-step panel that went out in Southern California. We had a lot of fun. We didn't know any more about the steps than you did, but we were enthusiastic about doing it. My favorite steps today, as they were then, are 4, 5, and 6, because they freed me to be me, and I'm very grateful. I'm a 4-step advocate. I don't care how you do your 4-step. I just care that you do it, you know. The things that happened in my life are absolutely no different than in any marriage. There's a lot of name-calling in marriages, and that used to just kill me. My husband used to tell me I was stupid, nobody would want me, blah, 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 and I hated that word because I already felt dumb enough without being called stupid. And my friend, Ungrateful Bud, who's my eye doctor and helped me look so nice today, said, you know, Carol, there's the joke about that. I said, what? And he said, God and Adam were walking in the Garden of Eden and said, can I ask you a couple questions, God? And he said, sure. He said, how come you made Eve so beautiful? And he said, so you'd like her. And he said, well, how come you made her so soft and smell so good and nice to cuddle up to? And he said, so you'd like her. And he said, well, how come you made her so stupid? And God said, so she'd like you. I love to laugh. I'll tell you, because laughter is... I don't shake hands because I swung on a man who reached out to touch me. I was untouchable and unhuggable when I got here. And so I hug. My sponsor told me, don't shake hands if you don't like it. And so I don't. But hugging has returned to me all the right parts. As I said, I started dating. I dated some alcoholics who were not conference approved, and but they were all gentlemen, and for that I'm eternally grateful for. And because I hadn't dated since I was 16, and it was difficult. So, but the married people in this program, I am utterly, utterly thankful for, because they took me everywhere, you know, because I'd been married over a quarter of a century, and single people, you know. Hang out with the married ones. Don't hang out in a crowd of trolling. Go with the married ones. You'll meet someone. And so anyway, when I was, I felt comfortable in my skin. Let me tell you, I was out there trolling with the rest of them. And I went to an Alateen wedding. I was very busy with Alateens in my early days, and I'll be forever grateful for that. I was going to an Alateen wedding. I had known these boys since they were 12 years old, and both of them married. This one was marrying a member of Alateen, and the other one did later on, too. But anyway, I went to that wedding. By then, I was dating an ordinary person who was very boring. And because once you've talked about the kids and the weather and the job, there's nothing else to talk about because feelings scare them to death, you know. How would you like to go to your church and say, you know, last night I thought about stabbing my husband, you know. I'm sure that they would say, oh, yeah, well, that's ordinary, you know. But But that's what they are. They're ordinary people who have a workable faith in most cases. But anyway, when I was ready, I went to this wedding. He didn't want to go because he didn't think there'd be any drinking. I went to that wedding, and there on the steps of that church stood Dick Thornton. He was tall, good-looking, and had beautiful gray hair and blue eyes, nice dimples, big shoulders. I went up and gave him a hug and a kiss, and he said, "Hi, Carol." I said, "Hi, Dick." Now, I don't remember where I met him, and my roommate said, "Where do you know him from?" I said, "Program." She said, "Where?" I said, "I don't know, but I know, I don't remember names always, but I remember faces." When he walked into the reception, he was with a short, blonde, voluptuous lady. I said to the mother of the bride, "As soon as she goes to the ladies' room, I'm going over and give her my card." And she said, "You wouldn't do that." And I said, "It's a program of attraction, and I want what he's got." And I have a friend named B.R., and she always says, "Love is but a fleeting moment. Lust lasts forever." And I really lusted after him, I'll tell you. And I went over and gave my card, and I said, "If you're ever in La Habra or Whittier, please look me up." And then I went home and waited, and my sponsor at the time was Winnie Eddy. And she said, "I didn't want anybody to call me, nobody I sponsored, no, not my sponsor. I didn't want to be on the phone, it was before call waiting." And she said, "You know, you're doing the same thing with Dick Thornton that you did with your husband." And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "You're waiting for someone else to make you happy. So if you want him in your life, put his name on a piece of paper, put it in your God box, and get your buns back into the business of living." And that's exactly what I did. And when I had completely forgotten about him and was going up north to visit my children, he called on a weekend that I normally wouldn't have been home. But I worked with BR, and she was a member of that panel. She said, "We ought to stay home this weekend," because I said, "Well, gosh, I've turned down all the potlucks and stuff," I said, "because I was going to be gone." She said, "Well, I think you ought to stay home." And by then I was teachable, and I listened, and I stayed home that night. My phone rang, and this deep, sexy voice said, "Hello, Carol, this is Dick Thornton." And I said, "Yes, I know." And that was a diamond. And we started dating, and we fell in love sober. Dick sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous a year longer than I was in Al-Anon. He needed that year to put up with me. And me sober thinking in Al-Anon. That's the diamond. I got my ring on Halloween when all good witches get their ring. That's a diamond. We had a program wedding, and that's a diamond. I had a huge wedding with more than 600 of you love relatives in attendance. And that's a diamond, because we were joining two parts of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon from different areas. That's a diamond. We made a commitment to that marriage, and by that, I wanted to do all the right things. You see, I had couples ahead of me whose marriages I watched, like Dick and Peggy, Clancy and Charlotte, Winnie and Lloyd John, you know, lots and lots of people, the Scotts, you know. I have a lot of people as examples, because I was taught the only way to carry the message of AA, Al-Anon, or Al-Anon is by example, and by example. And I believe that today. I don't care how many years you have. I want to see how you behave here, in the stores, in the street, at work. You know, we have young people coming in and they say, "I just hate my job." I wonder why. You know, I wonder why. Because they have a boss. You want to be boss? Go to school and be the boss. It's very simple. But in our marriage, I put Dick before my children. Dick had four and I had four. I got my eight. We put him before my children. He put me before his. We did absolutely no babysitting for any of our 16 grandchildren at the time. That's a diamond. Our children had all been married longer than we had. That's a diamond. Dick took all the pain out of my first marriage. That's a diamond. That's a diamond. We did everything that we ever wanted to do together. That's a diamond. We don't have date night. Every day is date night in our house. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And he loved me from the top of my head to the tip of my toes. That's a diamond. We prayed together on our knees morning and night. That's a big diamond. We had no secrets in our marriage. And that's the diamond. And one thing you alcoholics seem to get is emphysema. Now, my husband fell and broke his hip 9 months after we were married. We told the kids we wouldn't want to have children, so he broke his hip. And I became a kept woman, and that's what I call women who are fortunate enough not to work. So be grateful. And God, I loved it. I got to do all the things. Dick wanted me to stay home. So for 7.5 years, I was home. Emphysema is a progressive disease, and he got steadily worse until it was incurable. He was at home, tied up to a 50-foot hose. Told him if he ever messed up, I'd tie it in a knot. Because let me tell you, if you have someone that's terminally ill in your home, you better have a good sense of humor. You better have a good sense of humor, because it really comes in handy. Do your crying at the mall, because they never care at the mall. They don't even look at you. But anyway, because of that, I decided to go back to work. And I went and got a Mickey Mouse job. I just wanted a job where I had to dress up every day, because you need a reason to buy clothes, of course. Because I got my own taste back when I came to Al-Anon. I just wanted to be kind and loving to people, because that's the only thing God wants me to be. The kicker is he wants me to be kind and loving all the time. That's what I strive for. But anyway, I got this job, and because of this Mickey Mouse job at a large corporation, I met a man who, I could talk to men now, because I didn't have that jealousy in my life. My husband was always horrendously jealous. I couldn't understand why, but anyway, he came in on a cart, and I asked, we got to talking about emphysema naturally, and the next time I saw him was about a month later, and he was walking without the oxygen. And I said, what happened? And he said, well, I'm preparing for a lung transplant. And I said, I didn't think they could do transplants. He said, oh yeah, you have to be, you know, in this exercise program. But because he'd been doing this, he was able to do without oxygen for periods of time, and he told me about it, and I went with Dick. And that's another thing. When you got someone sick, go with them to the doctor. You both need all the notes and all the questions answered, and one of you always gets confused. So we both went together, and I asked his doctor how come he hadn't told Dick about the transplant program, and he said, well, I didn't think he was a good candidate. And I said, I didn't think you were God. You taught me that. You taught me to stand up and speak up, and for that I'm grateful. But because of that, we went to a transplant program, and Dick was approved. And he was the only alcoholic that I know in 1992 that got a lung transplant from the gift of life, from a young man who had never drank or smoked in his life. And because of that, we had 4.5 glorious more years of our marriage. My husband and I got to speak together. We had a wonderful time. He eventually got some bad medical treatment. That's another thing. Doctors don't always know. Even though you tell them you're alcoholic, they think they know best. It's not true. But anyway, it was a wonderful life. My marriage was the most glorious part of this program and the biggest diamond. And he passed away on 4 years ago, in January. He died just the way he lived. Content to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't alone in that room when he died. You know, you never have to do anything alone in this program unless you want to. Unless you like to sit on your pity pot till your butt's so red you can't stand it. Friends were with me when he died, he didn't want to go. He didn't want to leave me. I said, Dick, it's not my time to go, but I release you with love. He had almost died many times, but anyway, when he died, my friends took me home. I showered and got dressed and went to the mortician. That's what I call him. He said, are these all your relatives? And I said, well, they're my love relatives. Now, they never heard the word love, so they just thought they were related. And he said, well, I'm asking the questions and they're answering. I said, because they know what I want. Then he said, well, you have to pick out this casket. So he opened this door, and there was as many coffins in there, I think, as there are people here today. You had to stand there and look. Larsine reached over to me, and she said, we have a professional shopper in our group. She reached over and she said to me, we're standing in the store, she said, you know, if you have to buy a coffin for Dick, she said, don't buy it here. There's one on the internet. And I tell you, I laughed till I was sick, and the poor mortician didn't know what the heck to think, you know. He thought we got all these crazy people, you know. But he's in a good place. He's in a good place. He's upstairs with all the other people having a good time. In fact, today when the phone rings and this realtor called the other day and said, Dick was by the office a couple of weeks ago and wanted me to give you all the information about the new rates. And I said, he was, huh? And he said, well, where is he? I said, well, he's upstairs. And he said, well, when's he coming down? I said, I don't know. He hasn't called or written. He tell me. They are sick, sick, sick. But another big diamond is sponsorship. I believe in sponsorship. However, I do not believe in telling people what to do. They got to learn to stand on their own 2 feet. Not by themselves, because you're always there. I talked to my sponsor this morning from the dining room. Heard every word she said. Didn't have any problem. And she wishes you all well. And she'd like to be here too, I'm sure. But Charlotte's not able to travel today, but she will be. And the thing about it is that the ladies I sponsor, and I only sponsor ladies because they've been to hell and back just like the alcoholic, and I only ask them one thing. And the only people more grateful for them than I am are their husbands, because they work their program at home, and home is where the diamonds are. If you want your husband to be a lover, become a lover with no expectations. No expectations, that's the kicker. If you want her to be a hugger, you become the hugger. Put them first. That's where they belong. That's where they belong. Because a marriage is a blessed event in this program, just like it is any other place in the world. And you have your heroes. I sponsor some ladies who are husband beaters, and I call them my mafia squad. They have a warm place in my heart, and that stands for Magnificent Al-Anons Fit for Instant Assault. And I only have one rule. One rule for them. Call before you shoot. And when I was new in Al-Anon, I was asked to go and share my first 30 days. And I said, I don't know anything. And my sponsor said, that's true. However, has your home life changed in this past 30 days? And I said, yes. She said, well, that's what you share. And if someone asks you to be your sponsor, that's what you share. And if you're new and asked to sponsor, do it. Because you see, you know more than the newcomer. Because you have that 1 day, 2 days, whatever the case may be. And I'll tell you one thing, it'll keep you working the steps ahead of them. And that's the most important thing, you know. But home is where the diamonds are. And I was taught to stand up, speak up, sit down, and shut up. And that's what I'm going to do today. And I thank you for having me.